probably like $500 on their on basically just lollies.
Coaches and everyone listening along, thanks very much for jumping into the Talking Split podcast. Once again, I'm Rob Coulter, flying solo just for a little bit, but do have two guests on the pod this week, which we'll get into in just a second. As a reminder to everyone, if you can like, share, retweet, follow along all the good things that come with the podcast, that would be fantastic. Rate, review would be ideal. And if there are any questions that you have that you would like us to discuss on the podcast, by all means, send them through. You can follow along on Talking Split on the socials, X, Instagram, and YouTube. You can find us in those spots. Just a reminder to everyone, and we're about to get into a little bit of a chat with Luke Lehman coming up next, who's one of the Association Development Officers at Basketball Victoria, who's doing a Run to Unplug. So this is Friday the 24th of October, midnight to midnight, running in support of Smack Talk. So again, we'll put all the details in the actual description of the show, but if you want to have a little bit of a look at what he's doing and why he's doing it, go and have a look there. But we'll get into a quick chat with Luke just before we jump into the rest of the podcast. Joined by our resident running man, Luke Lehman, for the pod to start off with this week, who is part of the Smack Talk 24 Challenge. Luke, welcome to the pod.
Hey, Rob. How are you going?
I'm going better than you, I'm going to assume. It's the date is fast approaching, it'd be fair to say.
It is. It's too close now. I wish I had another month, but it is what it is.
Yep. So details for anyone listening, when and where?
So Friday the 24th of October,
yep.
So Friday week, midnight to midnight, so we'll start midnight Thursday to midnight Friday, down at the Mentone Athletics Track.
Excellent. All right, so a couple of things straight off the bat. You okay?
Mentally or physically? Yeah. Yeah, I am. Look, it's been a long process. Yep. I've been training for 20, 24 weeks now, and it's... The idea hasn't come from nowhere.
Yep.
It's one of those I've been running properly for the last couple of years.
Yep.
And I just thought, why not do something for the benefit of someone else?
Yep.
Both you and I have been on Wayne's chats, his information sessions. What an incredible human being.
Absolutely.
Incredibly resilient. And I'm just inspired by what he's doing out of a tragedy, basically. So I guess late last year, when I train, I don't use headphones or anything like that. So yeah, okay. I've got a lot of time to think when I'm out running. Jeez, and all that
stuff. The stuff that must be going on in your head. At least I've got a little bit of something going on in the ears to keep me distracted.
A little bit of self-therapy through it all, Rob. But just come up with the idea of, hey, what can we do for Smack Talk? It could look like anything. Spoke to my colleague Chris about an idea of, hey, why don't we do a run for 24 hours? I'm more than happy to do the 24 hours, but if people want to get involved, even better.
There was no one else diving on that grenade to say, no, you would like to do the 24 as well.
Chris was very much, this is on your own, mate, sort of thing. But we had a sit down with Wayne early this year. I had a real proposal in my mind. Hey, you know, this is what's going to look like. This is what we're going to do. And I think within 10 seconds, Wayne was like, please and thank you. So so since then, it's just been training.
Yeah. So for anyone that hasn't seen Wayne speak in the Smack Talk presentations in particular, absolutely recommend it. Like, we did a podcast with him last year as well, which you can go back and find if you're looking for some more info. But I think it loses a little bit on the podcast as to what you would normally see face-to-face from Wayne and the raw emotion that he goes through and the need for something in this space. And you see a lot of the social media laws that have come in or are coming in particular around that. It's certainly a worthy cause, I would suggest. And as you said, Wayne, just one of the best people that we have in the sport.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you look at the stats, Rob, like, we're looking at an average of 12 Australians taking their lives every single day.
Yep.
Like, one's enough, let alone 12. In the sport that we work in, Rob, that's a whole team pretty much every day. So for someone to, I guess, make a permanent solution to a temporary problem, we need to talk more about this. And so with the run, it's hopefully, hey, if you can come down for a run and a walk, it doesn't matter. You can skip around the track if you want to. But hey, here's an opportunity to potentially just get out of the house, get out of your own mind, do something for yourself, get off your phone for 24 hours. That's the whole point of Friday the 24th, is you know, log off from your social media, stop the doom scrolling and all this sort of thing, and actually enjoy what the world has on to offer.
Well, I mean, you have interrupted our podcast schedule, which does usually come out on a Friday, but we'll put that out on the Thursday for next week to try and keep everything in line with Unplugged 24. You can obviously register if you go to the Smack Talk website. You'll see all the links on there to register and unplug for 24 hours, which is a big part of what this is about. Obviously, you can take a selfie, I suppose, on the track if you really want to. Just don't post it until the Saturday, maybe, right. Yeah. and bring a little bit of awareness to it. What does you mentioned the training.
Yep.
What does the training look like at this point? Because you had a little bit of an injury scare in there for a while there.
Unfortunately, I was on crutches for a little bit. I guess in layman's term, I've had a calf injury, which is unfortunate.
Old person's injury too. Old person's. And I should know, like I do them regularly.
So training. So what a week would look like, Rob, is Monday is recovery. So I just do a whole lot of mobility work. Tuesday, Wednesday, I'll go for a run. Thursday, I'm in the gym. Friday, mobility again, and then Saturday's my big run. So anything up to 40, 50, 60 Ks. And then Sunday, a recovery run.
Yeah. Two words that don't usually go together, a recovery run. But I mean, for anyone that is looking to come down for a little bit, so it's obviously midnight to midnight,
yep,
across the schedule. 1 a.m. probably seems like the least appealing time to turn up for anything. What would you encourage people if they did want to come down? Can they just show up? Do they need to register or anything like that? Is it literally just turn up?
Just turn up. Yep. Put your running shoes on, your walking shoes on. Just turn up. I'll be most appreciative of any support that if anyone comes down and walks along or runs along, it'll be great. Even if they come down, just say hello.
Yep.
Any support will be great.
What would it look like for them? Are you content not walking with them the whole time or running with them the whole time? Do they have to keep up with you or do you have to keep up with them?
Look, let's be honest. There'll be a lot of walking involved in this. As much as we're calling this run to unplug, there will be some walking involved. I'm under no illusion that I can run this for 24 hours. Yep. So, look, if people want to walk, I'm happy to walk along. If they want to run, I'm happy to run. Not that 4 minute pace or anything like that. It'll be slow and steady for the whole thing. But if you don't want to walk with me or run with me, that's fine as well. You can do your own thing. It's just more, hey, can we get you off the phone for 24 hours and get off social media and support a worthy cause.
Absolutely worthy cause. And credit to you for doing it, because there are plenty of people that have said, hey, you know, Luke's doing this run for 24 and they're like, idiot.
Yeah.
Like, what's he thinking? Like, this is a terrible idea.
I think that is a very common response, Rob. What are you doing? I won't use any expletives on this. But hey, it's something I'm passionate about in terms of mental health and well-being. We can go through life talking about, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. I'm doing something.
Yep.
So if I'm going to be banged up by the end of this, I know that.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely hallucinating by the time probably you get the other end of it.
But I sort of look at it, Rob, and go, the pain that I'll go through is nothing compared to someone that's lost someone.
Yep.
Let's just put it like that. Mine's temporary for a lot of these people. It's permanent.
Yep. No, that makes a lot of sense. So it would be fantastic, as many people that can get down there as possible. We'll obviously put this on the Talking Split socials as well and just promote that as well. If you want to turn up, I'll be there at some stage. I don't know what stage I'll be there, but I'll be there at some stage throughout. I'll try and come during the quieter period. So late afternoon might be the window that I make the appearance on that one. I expect full fanfare and trumpets playing when I step foot on the track, because you know, that's how I roll.
We'll try and organise something for you there, Rob.
Well, it's more out of shock than anything else that foot has hit floor on the track. But credit to you for doing it, because plenty of other people wouldn't. And if you could get down and support, that would be a massive show of support, not just for you, Luke, obviously, but also for Wayne.
Absolutely.
You know, so passionate about this cause in particular.
Yeah, that's it. And thanks to you, Rob. Like, you've been shouting out about this for the last few weeks without being asked to do it. So I am very appreciative of getting the message out. So thank you.
Easy done, mate. No problems at all. Unplug 24. You can jump online, register for it. Please do register for it as well. Don't just stay off your phone for 24 hours. Register for it and make sure that you know, people's voices are heard in that space. I can promise you, life will go on without social media for a day. And very frequently much. It's better.
Yes.
Funnily enough, the running part I can't attest to, but the life without social media I can. So hopefully we see as many people down there as possible next Friday. So huge thanks to Luke Lehman for jumping on the pod. What he's doing is genuinely amazing, and it would be fantastic to have as many people sign up, obviously, to Unplug next Friday. That would be an amazing start in support of Smack Talk. But also, if you can find the time to get down to the Mentone Athletics Track. That would also be fantastic to support Luke as he makes his trek running around the track like Forrest Gump all the way through. There'll be a number of people there throughout the day. I'll be there. Not that that's a massive incentive for anyone to come along, but there'll be plenty of people in support as well. But if you can be one of them, that would also be amazing. We'll jump into the main part of our podcast today, which is, of course, continuing the trend with Coach Wellbeing Month. So we went through the nutrition side last week with Alex Parr from 8 Nutrition, and massive thanks to Alex. We've got great feedback on the information she gave us last week. This week, we've got Durham McInnes on talking about the physical health, and he does dabble a little bit in the nutrition side, of course, but we're talking more the physical side of things. So people that maybe haven't done a lot of exercise for a while there, you might have got to that point where you're more stagnant than active. This is a great podcast for you to jump into to just have a little bit of a listen about the things you could be doing and areas you should be focusing on. We'll jump in with Durham now. Okay, coaches, welcome back to the Talking Split podcast. Once again, someone who's nearly part of the furniture at BV by now, Durham McInnes from Core Advantage. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Fantastic to have you in, as always. We certainly don't take the knowledge for granted in this space, and you give a lot, obviously, to Basketball Victoria, athletes, coaches, and everyone else in that space. So fantastic to have you in. In particular, we normally have you coming in talking about players, S&C, injury prevention, rehab, those sorts of things, which we're not dismissing. We're not saying that doesn't matter, but we're talking coaches today in particular, yep. and in particular, how to live a healthier lifestyle in general. So we're talking the physical health of people in this space. So there's a lot of parents that listen to this podcast as well that probably drop their kid off and think, well, I've got an hour to kill, what can I do? Those sorts of things, which we can get into in a little bit. But again, as always with this, I'll preface this by saying, please do consult with your medical professionals if you need to in this space. So this is, everyone is going to be a little bit different. So take what you need from this. But if you are looking to undertake any physical activity, especially if it's been a while, please do check in with your doctor first.
Absolutely. This is informational only, not a prescription.
Oh, I like that. That will be dropped on every podcast from here on out more than anything else. So, I mean, you've been in, what, basketball now? We're talking upwards of 20 years comfortably. Yep. When we talk health and well-being, and in particular the physical side of things, what are some of the mistakes you see coaches making in this space to start off with?
Yeah. Well, I mean, first, I think it's important to be fair to coaches.
Yep.
It's actually a really hard challenge. Coaching and being healthy and fit aren't always in alignment, because if you're a good coach, you get offered lots of gigs,
yep,
and you end up finding yourself out of the house, you know, four or five nights a week.
Yeah, of course.
And often to quite late. So I just would like to put it out there that it's the degree of difficulty for staying in shape for coaches is higher.
Yep.
And I think that means I've just got to have better strategies, because it can be done, staying in shape, but it is a harder thing.
And the time crunch, as you said, like, it's not unusual for a 6:30 a.m. session for a coach, but is also on court still at 10 p.m. that night with working a real job in between.
It's tough.
Yeah, that's a minefield.
The biggest and easiest mistake, I think, is simply just timing of your dinner.
Yeah, makes sense.
When I started here working with the MVP athletes on the Monday and the Wednesday night, we would start at 7, I'd get out of here at about 8:45, I'd get home at about 9:40, and then I was trying to have dinner, which is just not normal for me, and I just was sleeping like rubbish, felt like crap, right. And so I was like, I actually need to have my dinner at 6:15.
Yep.
So that was a simple little, and it gave me a bit of empathy for the coaches, because it is hard to, like, where do you fit it in? But absolutely, just an earlier dinner, you'll sleep better. And, you know, if your sleep is wrong, almost nothing else is going to be right.
Yeah, right.
You know, the satiety hormones, the hormones that make you feel full, are reduced when so we don't feel as full off the same volume of food.
Yep.
And our hunger hormones are actually elevated.
Right.
So higher ghrelin, lower leptin.
Yep.
So it's a really bad combo.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So the drive through on the Friday night after a game, not recommended. No. It would be fair to say.
Yeah.
No, and it's funny, because we had Alex Parr on last week talking about nutrition, and in particular, and she said much the same thing. She's like, if you can avoid eating about 3 hours before dinner, that's about the window that you want to be looking into.
3 hours before bed is so helpful. I have an Oura ring, which tracks my data in terms of my sleep, and every time I break that rule, I look at the data the next day. It's like, oh, the app will actually say to me, "What did you do wrong yesterday?"
Yeah, it's 10 p.m. dinner. Like, we've all been there. I mean, it's a good point though, because it is one of those things that will have the domino effect.
Absolutely.
Of one meal at the wrong time equals one bad night's sleep equals terrible next day, and all of a sudden they compound
over the course. Absolutely. So, yeah, eating a little bit earlier. And then sometimes also having a little – some for some of us, I'm a bit like this. If I eat a really early dinner, I feel a little hungry before bed. And I have a lot of trouble sleeping if I'm feeling a little bit hungry.
Yep.
So it might be that you just, like, I don't know, have some almonds or something in the drive home. They're not a proper meal, but just something so you feel full enough to get a good night's sleep.
Yeah.
But get that actual meal in pre-training, not post, for most people.
I think that's a great bit of advice in particular, purely because we do live in such a time-poor generation, I guess. Like, we feel like we're always bouncing from one thing to the next thing to the next thing to the next thing. But having that pre-organized, I'm going to have this, and this is what I'm going to have in this window here. Here's how I can get this organized 2 days before when I do have a window. I'm going to leave the almonds in the car because I know that's where I'll be at that spot. And to be fair, places are getting better at being more accessible. Like, if you go and fill up with petrol, it's not just Mars bars and Snickers. Like, there's plenty of other options there as well.
We've never had it better in terms of that stuff. Like, you go to the supermarket now, and there's all these ready to eat meals.
Yep.
And some of them are quite good. So even for me, sometimes I'll pack an emergency meal, just bring along because I know I'm not going to have time. But you can microwave something.
Yeah, so definitely,
it's good.
And it's interesting because we were talking to Alex about, in particular, fasting. And the benefits and all those sorts of things and differences between men and women and that sort of space too. And I was listening to another podcast, it was The Diary of a CEO, and they were talking about heart health, in particular the person that was on there. And they were saying that they, and again, this is not medical advice, do your own research, but they were saying that they've had people fast for months on end, potentially on what it is. And a lot of it has to do in particular with insulin and the spikes and everything that goes with that. So it's amazing how often what you might feel like is something really small can actually make a massive difference in that space and what's going into your body in the first place.
Absolutely. And managing your blood sugar, like knowing what you're having and having a fairly even blood sugar throughout the day rather than having huge spikes.
Yep.
Because as soon as your blood sugar gets really low, it's just our instincts are we go for the most high calories, sugary thing we can get, and then we're in that yo-yo.
Yeah. And it's funny, it's actually something I've sort of looked at a little bit since talking to Alex in particular. And it was about breakfast. Mm. And I've never been a breakfast person. Like, I don't know, for whatever reason, I get up, I just want to go do stuff. I don't want to sit there and eat breakfast. And it was not so much about you need fuel as that by having breakfast, you will not be hungry. And it's more that sort of shift of mindset, I think, around, but just by having breakfast means you won't get to like 10:30 and go, hey, those Tim Tams look pretty good.
Mm.
That'll do for morning tea. And that's the first meal you're eating the day, which is obviously not nutrient dense, which is obviously not a super healthy one. Nothing wrong with Tim Tams, in moderation, of course, but that's not what you want to be having first meal of the day. Yeah. So breakfast is an interesting one.
Breakfast is one. I went on a bit of a journey with breakfast and that I did intermittent fasting for about 18 months.
Yep.
I was super stressed at Core Advantage in the early days, and I was having
some
tummy business dramas, and then things got better, but my tummy didn't. And my business partner said, "You should try intermittent fasting."
Yep.
And I tried it, and I was always someone who had to eat every 3 hours, or I got really hangry.
Yep.
And it was really interesting. So I would eat breakfast at 1 o'clock.
Yep.
And what was interesting for me was out of that, I really craved healthy, high protein, good choices. Yeah, and I didn't crave the high sugary stuff while I was fasting.
Right.
Once I got through the first week was headaches and I felt like rubbish. And that was it was really good, but I did it for till about 2018. And what I did notice though, that I was really flat for about 2 hours after I'd broken my fast right in the middle of the day.
Yep.
So I broke the fast, but then I was pretty useless till about 3 o'clock. So I switched back to having, eggs for breakfast, eggs and a coffee for breakfast.
Okay.
And I found that to be such a good mindset because I get such a nice, slow release of energy. I feel good all the way through till 1:30.
Yep.
And then I have my lunch and I'm really good. So having a source of protein like eggs, having something that has a slow release as opposed to whereas pre, like in the old days, I would have oats and I'd always be hungry like 90 minutes later.
Yep. So doesn't quite have the same flavor-packed,
benefits. Not the same. But, anyway, I found that. But I think it's very individual. You've got to find out what works for you and notice, what you're in it. Particularly if you have a work life where your decision-making matters, notice, what your energy level's like.
So we're going to talk into coaches. And, of course, coaches, all shapes, sizes, age, demographics, everything in between. How, I'm just curious more than anything else, how does physical fitness change as we age? Because what you could do at 18, you obviously can't do at 48,
yep.
even if you think you might be able to. Like yep. there are people that just decide on a whim one day that, you know, I'm going to run, you know, 25K, and they can.
Yep.
But for the vast majority yeah. of people, they can't. Yep, it's, exactly. it's a terrible decision to go and do that. But yep. how does it change as we age?
Yeah, so I think that the best way to think about it is in terms of the body as an anti-fragility system.
Yep.
So if we think of the example of fragility, think of a wine glass. Very fragile, drop it, it shatters. And we've often thought of the opposite of that as, say, a stainless steel water bottle. Drop it and it's fine.
Yep.
But that's actually just durability. It is still going to accumulate damage, the stainless steel bottle. Antifragility is where, you know, if to keep the water container analogy going, yep. Is where if you dropped the container and it got stronger every time you dropped it.
Right, gotcha.
And that's the human body. That's the magic of the human body, is it's an antifragility system. So if we put ourselves in zero gravity,
yep.
we get really weak. And they have it with astronauts. So they
yeah, of course. Yeah, they always come back lighter and
yeah,
a little bit more fragile.
So we're an anti-fragility system. So we benefit immensely from doses of stress and damage. And that's what keeps our body strong and good, because it responds, keeps the muscle going, keeps the bone density up, all those things.
Yep.
But the individual components of our body vary in terms of their anti-fragility properties. So my eyeball, so my bicep, anti-fragile. If I do more curls, it'll yep. get stronger, the tendons will get better, et cetera. My eyeball, like that's not anti-fragile.
Not training that. Like it's
that just is what it is, right?
Yep.
But what happens is that structures in our body that were really anti-fragile, like when you're a teenager, you know, like you could yeah. play one-on-one all day in 35 degree heat, full court, yep. and the next day you'd be like, oh, what do we do today?
Yeah, you know? I miss those days, as it turns out.
And so like our tendons when we're younger have really good anti-fragility properties. But as we age, they're changing in composition. And so a big part of the aging process is that, yeah, we're just less responsive to training, less anti-fragile, but also simultaneously we tend to be doing less, so we're getting less dosing of those stresses.
Yep.
So it's a combination of our behaviours change. We don't run, we don't jump as much, and also the tissues need to be more carefully dealt with.
Yep.
So I think that's the big thing is you need to try and keep up the dosing of a bit of impact work, you know, a bit of strength work, a bit of flexibility. If you want to have a physical trait, it's very use it or lose it. Like you've got to keep it going. But the annoying part is you've got to tread this really fine line, particularly if you're, you know, over 40 and over 50, where you can be trying to train intelligently. You can overcook it a bit, and now you set yourself back by 3 weeks.
Yeah, so, I must admit, the calf does not bounce back like the calf used to yeah. Over the years, and all it takes is one, and all of a sudden there's a little bit more pain in that thing every time you go for a trundle.
It's really annoying. And the other thing is often by the time you're middle-aged, you've accumulated a bit of an orthopedic list of things that you've done in the past as well. So yep. it's a little harder. So I think it's very doable. And I think it's that saying of it's simple but not easy. Like you can do it. But you've got to learn to train pretty intelligently, and you've got to try and live in kind of that 3 to 7 out of 10 range in terms of intensity.
Yep.
Like, don't try and post 9 out of 10 workouts. But if you can average a passing mark, like for my own training, yep. I'm 52 now, and
don't look at Durham. Don't look at day over 32.
You're very kind. And I try at all times to just keep in that 3 to 7 band. Yep. And if I'm averaging around a 6, like if most of my workouts, if you average it, it's kind of a passing mark.
Yep.
I reckon that's actually a really, really big win.
Yeah, cool.
But that's easier said than done, because sometimes you can feel really good and you probably yep. go a little hard at it. But I think the big thing is picking stuff that you can do with really high consistency. So lower the bar, so you don't have a program. Like everyone starts out with they're really enthusiastic, really excited, and they go, this is going to be the time I'm going to get myself in rip-roaring shape, yep. and they throw way too much in.
Yep.
And then they get hurt. So it's probably worth talking about the difference between motivation and excitement, because I think
it's almost like I sent you the show notes, Durham, and I actually didn't, because one of them was, how do you get people motivated to want to change in this space too?
Yeah. So motivation is, you know, it's your reason for doing something.
Yep.
As opposed to excitement, where you just are really hyped up and wanting to do it. They're two quite different things. And in terms of motivation, there's just so much benefit to a good training program.
Yep.
So, and mostly it's around how you feel. So if you're in a regular training program, you are going to physiologically reduce the ability for your amygdala, your stressy part of your brain, to fire. So you literally can't feel as stressed if you've been for a run than if you haven't.
Yep.
You have better prefrontal cortex activation, so your brain just the thinky part of your brain, the part of your brain at the front that does all the thinking, that part works better.
Yep.
And it significantly reduces your negative affect. So positive affect is when we're feeling good. Negative affect is when we're feeling bad. And they're actually sort of different systems within our brain. And you basically wipe away the negative affect. So it doesn't so much elevate your mood as it takes away all the things that might be kind of depressing your mood. So in terms of how you feel, it's so potent, so powerful. Yep. And then there's also how your body feels. So stronger, you know, muscles, ligaments, joints, things don't ache as much, everything. Yep. So there's a tremendous amount of good reasons to do it. But the problem is that most people are more motivated about how, when it comes to getting in shape, they're more thinking about how they look.
Yep.
Which really, I think you should try and treat that as a nice side effect. Like a great program should make you feel great, keep you healthy, and as a nice little bonus, it also helps you look nicer.
Yep.
But I think if you do it for the looks, like if I was doing my training for looks, I'd be bitterly disappointed at how this rig turned out.
Very harsh. Very harsh.
You know what I mean, though?
Like, yeah, I get what you're saying, though. And it's funny because like one of the things that you've been recommending a lot of people do is planks, obviously, because it obviously builds a lot of – I know when I have to do planks, I can think of nothing worse than doing a plank, and in particular doing a plank properly. Like it is one of those ones where I look at it and it's like one of the most basic exercises you could possibly do. It's not appealing. I always hate it. I sweat more when I'm doing a plank than I do any other exercise. Mm. Ridiculous. But once I'm done with it, that euphoric feeling afterwards of good, it's done. Like, and I've done something hard.
Yeah.
Like it's almost like the mental tick off in the mind.
Absolutely.
Of it's done now.
Yeah.
And that kind of motivates you to go and do something else.
Yes. Well, and that ties in absolutely to my thing about momentum.
Yep.
So I think people overrate what they call motivation, which is actually just excitement.
Yep.
And they should more lean into the why, like why am I doing this? Because you know the why, like I am a permanent 10 out of 10 for motivation to train.
Yep.
Like because I'm a strength and conditioning coach, and if I'm not in shape, it makes me look like a fraud.
Yeah.
Right. Yep. So I kind of have it easy in that sense, in that there's no internal monologue. Oh, should I? Shouldn't I? I'm like, you will look like a fraud. Yep. Don't you just have to go train? So I'm a 10 for motivation, but this morning I was a 1.5 for excitement. I didn't particularly feel like it.
Yep.
But I just went and trained.
Yeah, right.
You know? So it's that distinction between that. But I think the really big thing is momentum. Part of what made sure I still did train was that sense of, well, I've built up a lot of momentum. I don't want to let myself down now. That sort of sunk cost thing, which is just
makes sense.
A human thing is that we're very biased towards what we've already invested in, already done. And so you kind of want to leverage that. So I think that's super, super helpful. And to get really good momentum, the single most important thing is make it really easy. Yep. Like make your threshold, I'm going to train for 20 minutes a day, but I'm going to do it every day.
Yep.
Rather than I'm going to do this kamikaze workout for an hour three times a week.
Yeah, and it's funny you say that because I know, like just using my experience to start off with, anytime I'm about to start training again, I have this real fear of dread. And it's like, I know what this feels like. I know I feel a bit vomity. I know I sweat. I know I get like the tingles everywhere. Mm. It's like, oh, this is not going to be good. And I have that real fear of getting injured and having to go back and reset at the start. And like a couple of weeks ago, I think it was, I hurt my neck doing something else. I hadn't been able to lift like 2 or 3 weeks.
Mm.
So just got back into it again this week. And I've got that pain that comes from the body. And it's like, oh, I've missed that. Like, and it's this real weird sort of thing in my head. And it's like, no, but I've actually really missed having that feeling of, I've done something today.
Put some work in.
Yeah, it's bizarre. And I don't know why I have that. Like, I'm not motivated to go into like Mr. Olympia or anything like that. Like, it is genuinely just, I want to be more functional.
Yep.
More than like, I need to be able to twist and grab things. I need to be able to stand on a stool. I need to be able to jump off something for whatever case it is. Like, mentally, I think for me, it's more about functional movement and the mobility. And the flexibility to be able to go and do something in just everyday life, because I'm not trying to be a high-performing athlete. I'm trying to live a better life and have a longer run. Like at some point we're all going to age horrifically and, you know, life is what life is. But you want the runway to be as long as possible to get there.
And you want to be, I think it's like, you know, there is a decline at a certain point.
Yep.
But you can really change the angle of that decline.
Yeah.
You know, you can make it not a cliff that you fall off. Because some people pretty much fall off a cliff. Like they just they're really inactive and they get away with it, and they get away with it right until they don't. So if you can do a bit of stuff. But I think the DOMS things, the delayed onset muscle soreness, which is what you're talking about, so you do something and you're sore the next day. I think we know the cool thing about it is that if you get a bit of DOMS, you know you stimulated an adaptation. You didn't do a warm-up set. You weren't just moving. You're actually improving.
Yep.
And so that doesn't mean you always have to have DOMS. Like so often if you're on a – like if I'm on a real roll with training and I'm, you know, 4 weeks into a training block or whatever, I will often get to a point where I just stop getting DOMS full stop.
Yeah, right. But is that a sign of concern for you, like that you need to change something?
No, because sometimes you've just got kind of your muscles to where you want them at that point, and they're adapted. Yeah. And so it's the same with athletes. Like once athletes get in a really good, if they've put in a really good off season, sometimes they'll get to a point where they're just not having that drama, so they're not having that soreness, which is fine.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But I think it's also useful to early days to feel like I've definitely, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I stimulated an adaptation and my body's adapting. So,
and it's funny, like just even talking about that, it reminded me of a TV ad I saw, and we're going back maybe 10 years or so, and it was an old guy that was just picking up like a weight and just walking around with this kettlebell everywhere, and everyone in the street sort of looking at him like, what are you doing? And it was all about, and he's clearly a grandfather or something like that. Mm. And it was all about he wanted to lift the grandchild up to put the star on the tree.
Yeah.
And this was the build to get there. And it sort of made me reflect a little bit. It's like, well, that's kind of what, you don't want your body to just decline to the point where you can't do anything. Like, it's a fear of a lot of people is they don't want to just be that couch potato that never moves, can't move, has to walk down the shops and is out of breath by the time they get there. They don't want to get to that point.
Absolutely.
So it is that incremental stuff to start off with. It's like, well, look, let's zoom right out. And this, what are some of the things that you could do that you're not doing? Mm. And whether that's, you know, park a little bit further away from the stadium as you walk there. Like, what are the small changes that coaches can look to make, I suppose?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what you want to try and do is create a situation where the behaviours you don't want to do are like ladders, where you have to have a real effort. And behaviors you do want to do are like slides, where you just jump on the slide and you've kind of slid into the activity.
Yep.
So the classic is I had a long, long time ago, I had back when I was doing personal training, so it was a very long time ago, I had a client who was out of shape, chronically depressed, very intelligent, knew he wanted to train, knew he wanted to get into a rhythm, but just couldn't get it together. Now, I happened to know that he lived on a clear way. And so what I did was I said, what you're going to do, because once he would get to the gym, he was fine. He'd be there and he'd train.
Yep.
So what you're going to do is every night you're going to come home, you're going to park your car on the clearway because it will get towed at 6:30 if you don't get up and move it.
Yep.
And so he got on the run of his life. And the amount of times he said to me, look, I got up, I decided I'm not going to go to the gym today. I'm just going to go move the bloody car. Cursing me.
Yep.
But he'd get in the car, he'd turn over the ignition, he'd be like, I'm already halfway there.
Yeah, I'm here anyway. Like, I may as well. Like, right? But it is that mentality. Like, and it's even just put your shoes on.
Yeah.
Like, and it's amazing how many times where you don't want to do something, you put your shoes on and it's like, well, I've kind of done the hard part. Like, what I'm about to do is actually not that bad.
Yeah. Yeah. And so James Clear calls that habit stacking.
Yep.
The Atomic Habits guy. Yep. And so I think trying to find ways to habit stack. So my wife is addicted to coffee, like most of us. And so there's a coffee cart in the park. So she habit stacks, but she's not allowed to have a cup of coffee till she's done a walk in the park.
Yep.
Simple as. I lay my clothes out the night before so that if I decide to wuss out on my training, I have to do this kind of walk of shame with all my clothes back to the wardrobe.
Yep.
So the more friction you can create for the behaviors you don't want and the less friction for the ones you do. Yep. And so it's just working out what works for you and actually taking a bit of – I talk about it as having an adherence strategy. So you want to have a strategy for your overall training, like what am I going to do in terms of the nuts and bolts of how I'm structuring my training.
Yep.
But separate to that, you want to have an adherence strategy. So what am I going to do that helps me to adhere to my plan?
Okay.
Because often the plan's quite decent, but the adherence plan isn't, so the plan doesn't get done.
Makes sense.
So the best plan is the one that actually gets done.
True.
In fact, I made a couple of notes.
Yeah.
Articulate your why in terms of your adherence strategy.
Yep.
So articulate your why. Like, why are you really doing this? What are you hoping to get out of it? What's you know, what's the point of it?
Do you find writing that down is a really, better way to really reinforce really it? Post a note or something?
Post a note. Have a think about it. Why am I training? Because when you – and, you know, try and list the benefits you're hoping to accrue. Because when you list them out, you go, it's like this huge list of benefits from this one activity. It's such a powerful thing that you can do. And then, second point is aim for high frequency, low difficulty. Make it really easy to do the thing. Don't make it a high hurdle. Make it a low hurdle that you clear every single day. And that way you build up the momentum.
Yeah, I like it.
And, you set up some slides and ladders. Find ways to make it harder to do the wrong thing, easier to do the right thing. And then a big part of it is, I think, as you get a bit of momentum with that, what you'll often see is a little bit of a shift in self-identity where it's sort of like, I always run even when it's raining. That's just how I roll, you know, as opposed to, you know, I always sleep in because it's too cold. That's just how I roll. Like you start to, if you see those opportunities to kind of talk to yourself a bit differently about how you do that thing. I really battle against the, you know, we're all time poor, and often there's days where I've got so much I want to get done, and so easy to have that fall out of my to-do list, that I write into my to-do list, train like a boss. Now, I don't always train like a boss. Like this morning wasn't, but I still give it to myself.
Absolutely.
But it's like it's you're recording it as one of the things you did that day that you identified as important. And I think over time it just becomes less of an internal dialogue between should I, shouldn't I, can I be bothered, can't I be bothered, and more of a no, this is just what I do. I think that that adherence strategy, I think, really helps.
No, I really like that. And the habit tracking I really like. Like a little app on my phone of when I've done something, check the box. And for some reason there's a little dopamine hit that gets me every time of like, yes, I tick that thing off. And it's funny because I've got probably where I live, I'd say there's about half a dozen different ways I could potentially walk around my suburb. And for regular listeners of the podcast, they will know they got swooped heavily by a magpie a couple of weeks ago that caused blood in my head. And that was a decent whack. But because of that, I've had to change the way that I walk. And it's now a little bit longer. And the hill that I had been avoiding is now unavoidable by avoiding the magpie on the way through. But the magpie stopped swooping. And the other morning I walked the way that I used to. And I felt like I really shortchanged myself.
That's
like,
good.
It is. It's a good thing. But I sort of got to the end of it and I'm like, well, that was annoyingly easy. I need the hill back. And it's that ability to – it's like, well, okay, now I'm not just someone that walks. I have to be someone that walks and walks up that hill. And it's kind of annoying because it takes me an extra 10 minutes to get the walk done in the morning. But it's kind of a good thing.
Absolutely. Yeah, you want to lean into that.
For sure. That's like great. I want to keep walking up the hill now, as annoying as it might be.
A challenge.
Well, trying to avoid the magpies is probably the major exactly. motivator in that space. But what are the more common injuries you're going to see from people? Or not so much common injuries. What are the main pain points you're going to see from coaches and older people? Like, is it back? Is it knees? Yeah,
limiting
is it hips?
Factors. I think it's probably knees and backs are the things that are most discouraging. Because when your knee's sore, it hurts to do pretty much everything. And you know,
there's not much left.
Same feedback. So you know, it's about finding stuff that you can do that where you're working around the problem, or sometimes people underestimate how the problem can still be fixed. Okay. So you know, you injure your knee and the quads become really inhibited because the brain senses the injury and it doesn't want to deliver power to that area because it's like – if you had a broken leg and the bone's broken, and your brain allowed you to send power to that muscle, that would further break the leg, that would further tear apart the joint. So when you are injured, your body switches off power to an area to enable you to allow it time to heal. And that's a pretty much a universal thing. As soon as we get some pain, stuff starts getting inhibited. So often it's just about finding things you can do that are going to make that a little bit that area a bit stronger, get a little more activated. But it's finding things that aren't provocative. It's not just grinding through and saying, you know, I'll just tough it out.
We're not full Goggins on the way through that thing. And it's like, no, we all have lives we have to live that we can't do that.
So it's working out things that you can do that that work around and also maybe rehabilitate that area. So bike is the classic one. Bike is boring. It's painful in terms of muscle burn, but it has a really asymmetrical return on investment. So The chances of you injuring yourself on a stationary bike, pretty low.
I don't know, Darren. I reckon I could find a way. It's a good point. Like, it is boring, but it is...
It's got a pretty high return on investment.
Yeah, like it's the same movement.
You can just get – it polishes the knee joint. It gets the quads going. Yep. That movement's really healthy for the knee. And if you can, you know, just put Netflix on or something at home and just get that done, that can be a really good sort of corner of your program.
Yep.
So, if someone's got a bit of a sore knee, it might be let's try and do some strengthening work, a little pinch of that. Let's do a fair bit of bike because that's going to help the joint feel happier and healthier. And let's do walking as tolerated.
Yep.
But you fit the impact stuff in around the other stuff. Yep. And I think in general, people get their priorities. It's like almost everyone just does what they love and they don't do nearly enough of what they don't.
Yep.
It's like the people that love yoga should probably take 20% of that time and allocate it to strength, and the people that love strength should take 20% and allocate it to stretching.
Yep.
And so it's good to do stuff you like. From an adherence point of view, you want to do things that you enjoy.
Yep. Especially if it motivates you to get there, like you were just talking about.
Absolutely. Yeah. But you have to have a balanced training program.
Yep.
That has to incorporate some things that are going to both either strengthen you up or at the very least. Stop you from losing strength.
Yep.
Like, so just something to address the strength side of the equation and then something for the fitness and something involving ground reaction force like walking or running I think is really good as well.
Okay, interesting. Because there are so many different types of training and that this is, I think, where a lot of people get confused and there's like, it's all too hard. I'm just not going to do anything or I'm just going to walk. And, hey, if you want to walk, go nuts. Like, I'm cool with that. Where should people start? Like, we're not saying jump straight into a HIIT workout or an F45 workout or anything like that. Yeah. Like that's probably not going to end well, I would suggest.
Yeah, because they're selling a really intense exercise regime.
Yep.
It's very high in excitement. But I would love to see the longitudinal data on how many people actually successfully stick with that stuff without breaking.
Yep.
Because I anecdotally, I don't know of many people who are like, oh yeah, I've been doing that for 8 years. Yeah, everything's going great.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what should people start on, I suppose? Stretching and yoga like a good place to start just from a mobility perspective?
Yeah, just start with like a tiny bit of foam rolling, a little bit of stretching, just get going with that.
Yep.
Little bit of, and it might be that you start lifting like a really, really basic, if you have access to a gym,
yep.
It might be that you just do a little bit of seated row and bench press.
Yep.
And some bodyweight squats. So, you know, literally 15 minutes of work. If you don't have access to a gym or you hate them, which, can I just say, I absolutely get it. I go to a commercial gym every now and then. I've got a little home gym that I use, I'll train here at the SBC. But I go to a commercial gym every now and then, and I'm like, I didn't like them 10 years ago. I like them even less now.
Is that because you're trying to avoid the tripods of people filming everything along the way?
Yeah. And everyone's on their headphones, so it's this weird sort of passive aggressive, silent, no one talking, but it's the strangest place you'll go in any given week. I reckon it's the strangest place you'll go.
No, and it's funny because I think there are some great communities that come out of gyms, and they're probably the ones without the technology.
Yeah,
funnily enough, they're the ones without the headphones, the personal connection ones where you walk past someone, it's like, hey, can I jump in?
Great communities,
those types of
some
ones.
Some are amazing.
Brilliant. Yeah,
absolutely amazing, and they just become a third home, or a third place rather.
But yeah, we've probably gone down the fitness influencer path a little bit now, where it's all me, and not so much about this be a good environment for everyone to walk into?
It's a bit weird. Yeah. So if you can find a nice gym, like there's shout out to Focus Gym in Footscray. Down over in the west, and it's just the nicest vibe.
Yeah, awesome.
Because it's got a really nice owner who's there all the time, and it's just it's got great energy. If you can find a nice one, that's great. But if you can't, like some push-ups, bodyweight squats, and some calf raises.
Yeah, like, right. Okay.
Just do that twice a week.
Yep.
For 15 minutes. I think the best way to build up your own program is to think in terms of how many exposures do I need to that activity to get benefits.
Okay.
So if you were to do weights once a week, that's almost a complete waste of time. You're like, if I said to you, I'm running once a month.
Yeah.
You'd be like, well, that's going to take you precisely nowhere.
Yeah, exactly. Other than where you run. That's about it.
Exactly. So it's like minimal effective dose really is two sessions a week, reasonably spaced. So you're going to lift on the Monday. I'm a big fan of a Monday lift because if you've done that, the absolute worst case scenario is and your week just goes really badly, at least you've got that one lift in.
Yeah, true. You know? And you've sort of got Thursday or Friday, which Thursday is not going to screw up the one after that.
Exactly. As well. And then worst case scenario, if you didn't get that second lift in until Saturday, it's actually still worth it.
Yeah.
Sunday, don't do it because you're running into Monday's workout.
Yep.
But yeah, twice a week for weights and the minimal effective duration is probably 10 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
Like you'd be amazed, you know, if you think, you know, let's just do as many push-ups as I can, do 15 squats, do as many push-ups as I can again, now do 15 more squats, now do some calf raises.
Yep.
That's going to take you like 9 minutes.
Yeah.
But you've just at least said hello to all those muscles, so they're now not going to atrophy. You've given yourself a little bit of a mobility boost and you're just keeping that commitment up. So
I like it.
Yeah, so a small amount of that, and then you want to try and fill in your cardio next, I think. And it's finding a form of cardio that you can find a way to enjoy.
Yep.
So for a lot of people, team sports is a phenomenal way because, you know, the
– like basketball, Darren. Like, it's a fantastic sport.
Fantastic sport. It breaks my heart that I didn't keep it up.
Yeah.
Because there's no way I'm going back to it at 50. I'm not starting it at 52 because that is just – orthopedic surgeon central, because your tendons, you know, your tendons just change.
Yeah,
so certain things that once you've stopped doing a thing for 10 years,
you haven't had that movement to sort of keep it up.
And in the same way as you might visibly see someone losing muscle, the tendon loses integrity.
Yeah,
So everything's fine till it isn't when it comes to Achilles tendons.
Yep.
So if you are playing, keep playing. Don't stop. Pick up walking basketball. If you can do things that are a bit of fun, a bit competitive. I mean, the pickleball thing is going bananas. Yeah,
isn't it? It's everywhere now.
Yeah, and it's quite clever because the way they've shortened up, it's kind of like a hybrid between table tennis and tennis. So you don't...
Was it like bat tennis that we used to play at school? I'm completely ignorant of this. Like,
it's like tennis played on a shrunken court. So the court's quite a lot smaller. So you just can't run as many steps...
Yep.
So therefore, you can't put up the kind of velocities that hurt your joints.
To do the damage in the first place. Yeah, okay, gotcha.
So it's just kind of compacted tennis. It's like a slightly bigger than table tennis.
Yeah,
okay. So you're moving around, you're having fun, you're distracted.
Yep.
And it's really, so things that you can do like that are fun and communal, I think are great.
I think that's a big part of it. The communal, I cannot stress this to people enough, like find someone to do stuff with you.
Yeah.
And whether it be like a text message in the morning, like, I'm walking, are you? Like those sorts of things. A little bit of an accountability perspective on that as well.
Absolutely.
But it does build that little bit of sense of community around it. Like, we're doing this together. It sucks for both of us, but at least it sucks for both of us and not just me.
Yeah.
Like, it's that kind of thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think if you can have friends that you're doing it with, if you can be part of a community, I think that's huge.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
And then so you have that. That's your mainstay stuff, and then you just want to make sure you're getting a decent amount of cardio. And I think people probably underestimate how much benefit there is from just that zone two, which is more than a walk, but less than really hard work. It's the kind of cardio where you can chat during it, but your heart is above 100 and something beats. Just racking up some minutes of that that increases your VO2 max, which is hugely predictive of good long-term health and longevity. So finding ways to just sneak that into your weekly training routine.
Yep, I really like it. I suppose the bizarre question I have, and you may not be able to answer this because I don't think there really is an answer necessarily, how soon would people feel a change once they start doing something?
That's a really good question, yeah. I think you'll often feel a change in – there's different changes that you'll feel.
Yep.
So you'll almost always feel by week two just a bit kind of happier and a little more energetic because you've just – by week two, you've been training every day. You haven't been pushing yourself too hard.
Yep.
But you're now probably sleeping a little better. You feel good about yourself. You're pushing through a little bit. You've got the worst of the DOMS out the way. Because, the first three workouts is where 80% of the DOMS lives.
That's rough.
I think you'll start to feel good, just a bit nicer in your body and your mind. And then it's probably going to be like at the 1 month mark where you really feel, oh, I'm not puffing as much. Like you just feel a bit fitter and a little bit stronger and things are starting to feel good. And then it's probably in terms of really feeling more of that transformation, it's probably about 12 weeks.
Yep.
Like you can make a really meaningful transformation in your body. I've had people, you know, drop, you know, 9 kilos of fat, put on a couple of kilos of muscle, really transform, yep, going from having a bit of a, you know, pot belly to, yep, having lines on their tummy. That can be done in 12 weeks.
Yeah, wow.
That's why that's why 12-week challenges are so popular, because
it makes sense.
You get people in and you say, right, let's go for it. Let's see, yep, what we can do.
Well, it's, yep, the sustainability, I suppose, after that. Like, can you keep that up? Yeah, maybe not that, but can you keep exercising?
Can you hang in there?
Yeah. That's probably the challenge. And I suppose when there's a finite end date, it's like, I've just got to get to that end date, whereas we probably want people to make more sustainable changes long term than, yeah, the 12-week challenge. Like, that's nice and it'll do what it's supposed to do, but...
Yeah, I think you're better off just saying, I'm just starting this, I've got, yep, a long-term goal of that, and, yep, I'm not going to put huge expectations in terms of the outputs, in terms of the results.
Yep.
It's more, what are my inputs going to be? All right, well, I'm, yep, going to train every day, I'm going to do this, cool, do that. I think that that focus on process rather than outcome.
Yep.
Because if you focus on the it's amazing over the years how many both athletes and regular people wanting to be in shape, yep, would have so much energy attached to the outcome and end up not doing particularly well because they weren't really focusing on the parts of the process where they were letting themselves down.
Yeah, okay. Yep, that makes sense.
So it's like, no, focus on that process and I guarantee you the outcome will be there waiting for you.
Yep. How do you avoid overtraining? Because I can see that being an issue for, mm, people that sit there and say, well, you know, I'll just do a little bit more and I'll just do a little bit more and all of a sudden they've accumulated quite a lot more over the course of a week. Now, how do you find the barrier?
I think you've got to be strict with yourself about if you made a plan to do 20 minutes every day, yep, just do 20. Yep. Like just quit while you're winning.
Yeah, true.
You know?
Yep.
One of the greatest sprint coaches of all time, Charlie Francis, was an amazing sprint coach. His rule was if you did a PB in sprinting, training was done. You would go home.
Yeah, okay.
Because his rationale was you've just run the fastest you've ever run in your life. Yeah. How could the day get better?
Yeah, what more are we getting out of this?
You know, whereas, yeah, how much risk lives there in doing that second rep after having done the fastest run of your life?
Yeah.
And I always thought that was really clever. He was a real thinker.
No, it is.
I think it's like, you know, be quite disciplined with stopping as well.
Yep.
And that way just build up and then say, okay, well, I'm going to go 20 minutes the first week, I'll go 25 the second and just turn the dial up really smooth.
Yep.
I think that really helps.
Is there any...
And sometimes you might need to take a rest too.
Yeah, like, well, true. You just need a day.
You're a bit cooked. You, yep, had 3 hours sleep. Because there's that line where, like, if I've had, say, 6 hours sleep, which is not enough,
yep,
I'll train because I know the training will energize me and I'll feel better and I can get through my day more successfully.
Yeah, makes sense.
If I've had 5 hours sleep, I'm not going to because I just
there's no point.
It'll just dig me into a hole even further.
Yep. You know?
So some days you just need a day off. Yeah,
get that. Is there any benefit? Is there any benefit in which time of day you train? Like, is there a preference? Like, question. Is that preference to who you are, what your schedule is, that sort of stuff, or is there any science, I suppose, behind training at a certain time?
Absolutely. So number one, you should generally train it when you want to train, because, yep, if you're trying to train it when you don't want to train, you probably won't train, yep, and the whole thing becomes academic.
Another barrier.
Yep. Yeah. But having said that, I think mornings are approximately a million times better than evenings.
Okay. I like that. It's a quantifiable answer.
Yeah, science. A couple of reasons for that.
Yeah.
Number one, you exercise first thing in the morning before breakfast. If you do have the reality is most people have a goal of, we'd all like to be a little leaner.
Yep.
If you're exercising first thing in the morning, you've just come off ideally probably a 10-hour fast.
Yep.
So the chances of you dipping into your fat stores a little bit are going to be higher than if you've just had a meal.
Yeah, of course.
So, yep. So that's number one. Number two, if you're in a situation where you're training harder, I find I can train harder on an empty stomach than full, and a lot of people, because you're not worried. You know,
yeah,
about having a spew.
Yep.
You know, so you can push yourself a bit harder. And then also, there's just a psychological factor. If you've got up out of bed at 6 in the morning, you've gone and trained, you've had a healthy breakfast, you go to work, it's someone's birthday, and you're offered a huge piece of chocolate cake.
Yep.
You are more likely to go, actually, I've worked too hard. I've already put in all that work. I've got a bit of sunk cost about it.
Yep.
And maybe you'll have a smaller piece. You know, don't have no cake. Like, life's too short for no cake.
Yeah, true.
But you maybe have a little bit less. So you modify your behaviors a little bit better.
Yep.
And then the other thing is, in terms of consistency, what I used to observe back when I was a personal trainer was that the morning people's consistency was more than double that of the evenings, because you don't have a party to go to. You don't have a meeting run late.
Yeah, something just comes up.
Nothing.
Like traffic's bad or something.
There's nothing coming up. Like, you just get up and you go to the gym before the day has started.
Yep.
I think mornings is a lot better. But, you know, like, to be clear, if you know, something is infinitely better than nothing. So get in what you can get in.
Yep.
But I tend to find mornings is a really good way to go.
And this time of year is a really good time if you do want to be that after work person.
It's glorious.
Right. Like, this is the peak time of year. Daylight savings is the best.
It's magic. Yeah.
It's lighter longer. It's warmer. All those sorts of things. Like,
absolutely.
I'm a morning walker. No question, I'm a morning walker. But I've started to add in nights now.
Yeah.
Just because I can.
A little bit of a stroll.
Yeah. Like, it's after dinner. Like, let the food digest a little bit more. And it's nothing stressful or strenuous or anything like that. It's literally just move your legs for a little bit and come back.
And it's actually probably more beneficial than people realize too, because what you're doing is you're managing your blood sugar post-meal.
Oh, okay.
So probably the biggest upcoming revolution in sort of the science of fitness is continuous blood glucose monitoring.
Yep.
So it's where you know, 5 years from now, our Apple Watches will all probably tell us what our blood sugar is doing.
Okay.
And that's the kind of the keys to the kingdom, because because everyone's physiology is amazingly variable in how our bodies respond to food and how much of a glucose spike we get. And so some people, you know, they have rice and it goes through the roof. Some they don't. Some they have this. Some they have that. But what's universal is that we have a meal, our insulin will go up to some extent. There'll be an overcompensation with our blood sugar. Rather, our blood sugar go up, then our insulin goes up to try and bring it back down.
Yep.
And that creates a bit of a yo-yo. What's really surprisingly powerful is a 10-minute stroll after a meal, massive, and this is, you can see it on people's blood sugar measuring, because there's now apps.
Yeah.
So you have a thing that you put in your arm, and you have an app, and you can be watching it in real time on your phone, and you're seeing what your blood sugar's doing, which is pretty amazing.
Yep.
Huge differences in terms of getting rid of those insulin spikes. So, my recommendation is always try and do something as active as you can for at least 10 minutes after each meal.
Yep.
So even if it's just like there's a bit of tidying up to do around the house, say, save it for after lunch, or save it for after breakfast, or save it for after dinner. Yeah, the one thing to try and avoid is having a big lunch and then sitting still.
Yeah, which is what most office workers, I would suggest, probably do.
Yeah.
Like, they are sedentary in that space where you do tend to sit all day at a laptop or whatever it is that you're doing.
Yeah. And you could even be you try and save an errand. You had to chat to someone, so you had to walk over to somewhere.
Yep.
If you were lucky enough to work at the SBC, maybe you had to chat to someone at Knox. So
it's a long walk down there. Yeah. You don't, I can tell you from experience, you don't want to forget your keys down one of the stadium. So, yeah, I think that's a really good way to do it, because I'm starting to get to a point now where I'm putting together a little bit of a call list. Mm. And it's like, if I have to call someone, it's straight after dinner, and that's what I'm going to do it. Now, whether they answer or not doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
But it's like, well, I'm going to do it on that walk. This is what I'm going to do. Yep. And, you know, there have been a couple of times where I've called someone, they've been walking as well. It's like, oh, good. Like, it's being there with you. Like, this is actually a really good time to be able to do it, because you get their focus.
Absolutely.
In that time as well.
Yeah.
Are there any – so we sort of covered off quite a fair bit of stuff. Mm. Are there any – non-negotiable changes you would recommend for coaches? It's like, if you were just to do one thing, just do this, and that will make life infinitely better for you.
Okay, that's a great question.
Only because I'm always looking for shortcuts, and I'll take any shortcut that works.
If you were going to just do one thing, I think it would come back to that early dinner.
Yeah.
Because that's the lead domino. If you get the early dinner, you're more likely to get the good night's sleep, and then you're set up for training the next. So yep. I'm going to be cheeky and take two.
No issues.
Early dinner, train every morning, even if it's only 15 minutes.
Yep.
Just make it a non-negotiable. It's that thing of, you know, you got the good voice, like the little voices on your shoulder, like the angel and the devil.
Yep. One weighs a little bit more than the other one for me, to be honest.
But if you can just sort of eliminate that competition of saying, I said I'm going to do this, so I'm going to do it. Yep. I think that is – that's huge.
Yep. Yeah. At the risk of derailing this whole thing and going for another 45 minutes, I'm going to ask a real loaded question to a degree.
Ooh, okay.
Supplements and creatine.
Okay.
Where do they fit in all of this? Because there are obviously some that are brilliant, some that do absolutely nothing, and somewhere in between.
Yep.
What are most people probably lacking that they can top up with in terms of whether it be like fish oil, whatever the case might be, and where does creatine fit within that?
Great question.
I did some research, Darren.
Yeah. So most supplements are junk.
Yep.
They're a con job and they're junk.
Yep.
But there are a few supplements that have really potent, proven, well-studied effects.
Okay.
The single most studied substance in humanity is caffeine.
Yeah.
There's been like a million studies of caffeine.
Yeah, because they're all awake. Like they're wired, like there's no tomorrow.
They're on it.
Yeah.
And like the history of caffeine is so interesting. So I listened to a fascinating podcast talking about how pre-coffee, basically everyone was drunk all the time because they didn't drink water because it was going to give you dysentery and stuff. It wasn't.
Yeah, right? Makes sense.
And so people would drink a lot of beer and wine. And then there was this basically this revolution of productivity when coffee, because you're boiling the water for the coffee, so you could have that and not get sick cuts. Amazing. I'll have to dig out the podcast and I can't remember where it was. But anyway, caffeine is very well studied, and your time to exercise increases, your ability to put in work increases. So caffeine is very useful in the right doses, i.e. not too much, but super, super helpful. The next closest thing to caffeine is creatine. In terms of the studies conducted.
Yep.
And it's hugely beneficial and it's only getting more and more, as we are unearthing more and more about it, we're discovering it's more and more beneficial.
Okay.
So
is that for training or is that for just life in general?
Yeah, it's for everything.
Yeah, okay.
So creatine helps us basically produce available ATP, which is the energy source that our body uses. And you know, like our brain runs on ATP as well. So the established links now with creatine are enhanced memory, cognitive function, ability to cope with less sleep. So there's the muscular benefits of, you know, you will be stronger, you can finish out sets stronger, you can do more cardio. There's all these benefits, you know, in terms of your chassis.
Yep.
But also pretty significant cognitive, even that they're purporting that there's Alzheimer's prevention benefits.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, it's quite
that's really interesting.
Yeah, and you know that feeling when you've just done like an exam or a really intense meeting, you know that you feel like kind of your head feels just kind of fried?
Yeah, 24/7 I'm in that state, Darren. Yeah, I do.
They think that maybe that is just like you've literally been working your brain really hard and it needs more. Creatine. So I take it every day.
Yep. Is there a preferred method? Because you obviously see like the creatine gummies everywhere, and it's like that can't be the best way to take it. Or is there enough time?
I got sucked in so bad to the creatine gummies.
Oh, we've all been there. I tried to make my own, and it went miserably.
There was a company that got there was James Smith. If you follow him on Instagram,
I've seen a little bit of that.
Yeah, and he basically debunked. And the brand that I was using was the brand that he debunked.
Yep.
And I'd spent probably like $500. On basically just lollies.
Yep.
I'm still filthy about it.
I get it.
What I've now learned is that if the gummy is clear, it can't have creatine, because creatine put into it probably is going to make it cloudy.
Right.
So that's and that doesn't mean that if it's cloudy, it's guaranteed to have creatine.
Yep.
But it does mean that if it's not cloudy, it is guaranteed to not have a good dose of creatine.
Okay.
And those gummies are really expensive.
Yeah.
Whereas powder the powder is basically free. Like in terms of how much you spend for a tub of it, and how much it is per spoon. Yeah. It's basically for free.
Yeah.
And the thing is, some people have a bit of a gastrointestinal yep. distress if they have creatine.
Okay.
What I never realized is that what you can do is you can simply get a bit of yogurt, put a bit of creatine in the yogurt, stir right. it up, eat the yogurt, and you're fine. It's just having it right. in water. Because if you just have it in water,
yep.
then it's just the creatine, the irritant,
yep.
hitting your stomach wall lining, and then sometimes it doesn't go great.
Makes sense.
So have it in a bit of yogurt and, yep. and you're laughing.
And it doesn't matter what time of day. Is it preferable before a workout, after a workout?
Look, it's anecdotal.
Yep.
But a lot of the people that I've talked to find that it gives you that mental energy that is not welcome in the evenings.
Right.
Because it can yep. create some sleeplessness.
Yep, makes sense.
So I take mine with breakfast. I have yep. – so roll out of bed, go get the clothes that I've laid out on the kitchen table the yep. night before, throw them on, stumble yep. out for a run or stumble out for a lift,
yep.
come home, shower, et cetera, and then come and have breakfast. And the last thing I have after I've had my breakfast is the creatine.
Yeah, right.
And that way yep. it just happens. Right. And if I'm really diligent, I'll have some fish oil as well, like yep. if I'm feeling switched on,
yep.
Just enough to remember to have it. So I'm a bit hit and miss with that.
Yep.
Fish oil is just a good way of covering your bases.
Okay.
It's good for the brain, good for the heart.
Yep.
And we probably don't get enough of those good oils.
Yeah, well, especially people that don't eat fish.
Yeah.
To be completely honest, I'm one of them. Like, I'm not a seafood person at all.
Yeah, and I'm not very good at cooking it, so I'll have it if I go out sometimes.
Yep.
But, yeah, I'm not having it as much as I should.
Yep.
So that's
not a bad supplement to have.
I reckon, yeah.
Okay.
Again, like, to be really clear, not a dietitian, not a nutritionist. Yep. This is just a guy talking about...
Yep. How we got scammed on gummies. we've all been there. I'm still waiting for a tripod and little projector thing to yeah. arrive from COVID days that somehow I don't think is coming anytime soon.
And there's one other that I did
yeah.
that is collagen. So that's
okay.
having a bit of a moment, collagen.
Yep.
It's getting very popular. So gelatin products. The sell on them is that they can help nourish your cartilage. I don't know if it works or not, but yep. The study was pretty interesting. So Dr. Dominic Kondo, who's a nutritionist that I worked with back in the day at the Boomers and who worked at Core Advantage for us, she recommended it. And, the study was they attached radioactive biomarkers, right?
Yeah. this is sounding a little bit superhero origin story already.
So they attached these radioactive biomarkers to the collagen and had the subjects – and they're safe.
We'll talk in 20 years and see how we go.
And then they were able to watch using scans where the collagen went.
Yep.
And it went to your cartilage.
Okay.
And they're like, this stuff gets absorbed specifically in cartilage. I feel like it's just a bit of insurance. So I take a bit of that. That's not a strong recommendation whatsoever. That's just what I do.
That's okay.
Because I think it might be helping.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm staggered that you didn't go with foam rolling as one of the, if I'm going to give you anything, foam roll, because I feel like that's just a gimme that people can get involved in easily and straight away.
So if I'm training someone,
yep.
I'm absolutely going to recommend it.
Yep.
Because I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
And I can make you do it.
Yep. And the right way.
Do it the right way.
Yep.
It'll hurt you a lot, but I'll be there holding your hand, push you through until the point where it doesn't hurt, which is about 8 days in.
And you'll give us the reminder, not your lower back, not your neck.
Yes, like exactly. It's
drilled into me.
Yeah, good. But it's hard. It's a hard place to start because it really hurts.
Yes, it does.
My recommendation for people listening is start that in week 3.
Okay, yep.
You know, like just...
That makes sense.
Let's make the process pleasant. Or maybe just start with just the hips in week one.
Yep.
Just roll your hips and gently roll your calves, say, and then just gradually build up the amount of rolling you're doing. I'll send you that Basketball Victoria Resources link.
Awesome. I'll throw it in the show notes as well.
That has video instruction on it.
Yep.
My thing with rolling is it's profoundly beneficial, but you've got to do a pinch of it every day.
Yep.
But it's only 5 minutes.
Yep.
So it's not.
And bang for buck's pretty good. Like, if you feel better, you're more likely to go out and do something afterwards.
And it's very good as a diagnostic. If you're warming up, you know, you're doing a little roll, you've rolled your hips, you've rolled your calves, and your right calf is 2 out of 10,
yep.
and your left calf is a 7,
yep.
like, maybe I won't walk up that hill today.
Yeah, right.
You know, like that's telling me that's a little bit unhappy.
Or walk instead of run. Or
I'll ride the bike. Or,
yep. Makes sense.
It's a good little kind of pre-flight check,
yep.
I think.
I like it. what reputable sources can people go to when they want to start exercising again? Because I'm really mindful of the influencer space where it's like, oh, just do these 412 burpees and this will, you know, compound every day and then you'll look like the... Is there anything reputable that people can go to just sit there and say, look, I know this is going to do no harm and I will feel better because of it?
It's so hard because everyone's trying to sell products.
Yep.
And so they do it with extreme attention getting
always
stuff. And even the people that aren't doing with extreme stuff are still trying to sell you on their program. So James Smith is brilliant, but he's still trying to sell a program.
Yeah, it's funny because I saw something the other day and it was along the lines of, and there's an effect for this and I cannot remember it off the top of my head. You are better off, if you want interaction online, you are better off being wrong than asking a question. Because people will happily come in and debunk what you've put on there and interact with you.
Yeah.
But they won't sit there and say, or they won't comment, oh, great content, really enjoy this. And it hit me with the influencer space in particular. It's like, geez, how many people are out there are deliberately putting out wrong content or incorrect information because that gets the interaction loves it, for it. Because of course.
You get the fights.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't have a good answer for that.
Yep. Cunningham's Law, I think it is. Now that
Cunningham's
I
think Law. Yeah. Okay, cool. What I would say is probably try and just avoid anything that looks – anyone with like millions of followers. Like just these people that are just selling stuff that looks cool.
Yep.
I'll do a little bit of homework. When will this go up? How long have I got?
This is Friday.
Okay.
This
week. So I'm going to try and find a couple of people, which we may put in,
awesome.
In the show notes to follow. Notes.
Yep.
And look, it might be that I just make up a quick little page on that resources, just with a couple little little tips. Yeah,
cool.
But right. I think people really need to learn to think for themselves a bit with this stuff.
Yep.
And the most important thought is probably focus on building capacity rather than adding intensity in. So if that became your guiding principle of I'm going to train consistently and I'm going to chase capacity rather than intensity. So what I mean by that is, you know, your zone two run, your easy, slow 5K run, for example, that's going to be capacity.
Yep.
Your easy ride on the bike, where you're just accumulating more and more adaptations at a pretty low level of intensity.
Yep.
You do that over time, you've built more capacity, your performance envelope has got bigger, you can now do more. Whereas I think almost everything you see on social media is about intensity because those things look exciting.
Yep.
You know, yeah, so focus on the just boring accumulation of capacity.
Yeah, really like it. Is there anything that I haven't asked you about that you think is super relevant to our coaches out there that are potentially looking to train for the first time or get back into it potentially? Like I have to laugh. Someone emailed the other week that said, look, just so you're aware, I get that it's Coach Wellbeing Month. I've started back in the gym and I can't walk. And it's like, look, I appreciate you going and doing it. Like it's solidarity and all. But is there anything else that can help?
I think the most important thing is starting out much easier than you think. You know, like take whatever you were thinking of doing, chop it in half again. Now that's that quarter of what you thought you should do in terms of weights you should lift, reps you should do. Just try and find the easiest start point where you are guaranteed that you'll do week two because you won't be sore from week one.
Yeah, I like that.
People often don't think about it like, you know, with running. Like I'll have people who will come into the gym and they'll be like, I started running last week, so my first run, I ran 6K. Jeez. And I'm like, all right, so let me get this straight. Okay. So you ran 6,000 meters and you haven't been running at all. And I said, so if I said to you, it's day one, we're going to do 6,000 reps of bench press tonight.
Yeah. Doesn't seem like a great idea.
You'd say, Durham, that's lunacy, right?
Yeah.
So it's that thing, I think – you know, if you put a gun in my head and said you've got to have one overarching concept, it's make what you're doing this week just a little more than you did last week. So we call that in sports science the acute to chronic workload ratio.
Yep.
And so you want that ratio of it's often a weighted rolling average of the previous 4 weeks of training volume.
Yep.
Compared to what does this week look like? And so if we find that this week is double what your weighted average of the last week was, well, it's too much of a jump.
Yep.
Try if you can keep your jumps between sessions in terms of volume in the single digits,
Yep.
You know, and you're not going to know precisely, but just that concept roughly. Of just you know, for a lot of people, it took you 8 years to get out of shape.
Yep.
Don't try and get back in shape in 8 days.
Yep.
Like, just turn that dial up really slow. And you'll never regret it. You'll never be like, oh, damn it, I took an extra week to get in great shape.
Yeah, it'll be all right.
But that real snakes and ladders effect of you train too hard, now you've lost a week.
Yep.
Now you got to go to the physio because you've hurt your calf. Oh, it's
depressing.
It feels pointless and impossible.
Absolutely demoralizing when you have to go back to square one.
A bit of time. Yeah, it's a real slow and steady wins the race.
Yep.
Like, just ease your way in.
No, I really like it. Darren, you've been amazing again. Thank you very much
for
jumping
me in.
This is a great, and I know you're a passionate person about strength and conditioning in general, but even this topic, like the second you heard we were going to do this, like, I mean,
I was like, get me in the game.
I'm back in the pod. Like, it's so we really do appreciate it, and thanks very much for jumping in again.
Thanks for having me. Good fun.
Huge thanks once again to Darren McInnes for jumping on the podcast. I think it's about his third or fourth time that he's jumped in with us to share his knowledge in this space. So really appreciate his time and all the resources and information that he gives to all of our coaches throughout. He's so passionate about this area, as you can probably hear when he talks about this. So it is amazing for him to give up his time once again. Thanks everyone very much for listening. So we've got a bit of a double episode actually coming next week. We've got, because we've got Smack Talk coming on the Friday and there is the Run to Unplug going on and there will be no social media, we're not dropping a Friday podcast. What we are dropping is a Tuesday and a Thursday podcast next week. So two episodes for you to get through. So if you are going for that walk on Friday, if you are going around the track, two episodes for you to listen to on that one. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll catch everyone again next week on the pod.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Talking Split Podcast. Make sure you like and comment on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to share and subscribe so that you never miss an episode.